Hi, everyone. I'm Anita Lustria, and in my world, conversation is king. A number of years ago, when I lost my big job of being a radio talk show host, I decided I could mope around and be sad. Okay, I did a bunch of that. Or I could move on and start a podcast so I could keep the conversation going. That's how this podcast was born. As you listen, you'll hear about things that are important to me, and hopefully you'll resonate with these topics as well. Welcome to Faith Conversations. Welcome, everyone. I'm delighted to have on the podcast with me today, Jem Fadling. And I have never talked with Jem before, so this is super exciting. Some of you might remember a number of years ago, back on Midday Connection, if you happened to listen to me back then, I talked with Jem's husband, Alan, and we talked about his book called An Unhurried Life. And, you know, how can you not love that title, right? How many of us are striving for the unhurried life? So guaranteed we'll speak a little bit about that today. But Jem is with us. She is co-author, along with Alan, of a new book called What Does Your Soul Love? 8 Questions That Reveal God's Work in You. Well, she's a spiritual director. Of course, the title of the book is a question. I love that. And I kind of like questions anyway. So that, you know, maybe that's the spiritual director in me, but I love the title. What Does Your Soul Love? Yes, I need to read that book. And so I'm delighted to have her on the podcast. Jem is a founding partner of Unhurried Living, Inc., a nonprofit that resources and trains Christian leaders to rest deeper, live fuller, and lead better. Kind of makes you want to take a deep breath after hearing that, doesn't it? She is a trained spiritual director. I already mentioned that, a retreat speaker, and a podcaster, another one of us out there in the universe. So Jem enjoys serving as a guide with the intention of helping people encounter God in their very real lives. And Jem and Alan live in California, Mission Viejo to be specific. So Jem, welcome to Faith Conversations.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really looking forward to this conversation.
Well, hope you say that at the end.
Oh, I guess we'll find out.
Yes, we will. Yeah. That's great. No, seriously, when What Does Your Soul Love came through the door, I gravitated toward it on a couple of levels. One, because I saw who had written it. I had talked to your husband, Alan, in the past. And because what a great question. And then the subtitle of the book, 8 Questions That Reveal God's Work in You. Oh, yeah, let's read this. And because I knew this is going to be a great resource for me as a spiritual director, and that was another reason I was excited about it. You know, there's always a story behind the writing of a book. And there are a couple of things I want to talk to you about, too. One of which is Unhurried Living, and hopefully maybe that's a better place to start, because I bet I'll forget about it if I move beyond and immediately get to the book. So I do want you to say a little bit about Unhurried Living. That word is one that is not in many of our vocabularies. We don't generally say, hey, would you go run this errand for me? And, would you do it in an unhurried way? Right. Usually it's, hey, would you pronto go do this and be back faster than lightning? You know, or just anything in our lives. We don't tend to approach it in an unhurried manner. Why unhurried living? And, you know, how did you and Alan develop that and decide we're going to found this?
Yeah, well, of course, it comes from almost directly from his first book, which was An Unhurried Life. And then his second book a few years later was An Unhurried Leader, which either book we always say is both for living and for leadership.
Yes.
but just over the course of our lives, as our kids started to grow and we had been in various kinds of ministry all throughout our lives, he was mostly the paid guy and I was mostly the partner. You know how that is in ministry?
Yes, I do.
but in our former organization where we were, I was actually a paid member of the staff and I did a lot of work. And so it just came time for us to launch off into our own place. We're in our 50s now. All of what God has done in our lives has culminated into this generativity where we want to give hopefully the best of what God has done in us and now, and through us, of course, the whole time, but maybe now in a new and enlivened and enriched way in this season. So you can probably tell by my excitement, this is some of the most fun I've ever had in my ministry life. And even in my partnership with Alan, it's very, very co-led. So we ended up with the word unhurried living because you can see clearly it moves very easily from unhurried life. But this is what I always like to say about it. People generally think that you're talking about moving slow or doing less or laying around in a hammock with whatever drink you like, you know, which is, yes, let's do those things. Doesn't that sound good?
Yes, it does.
But what we're really saying is, the things we like to say very often is busy is a matter of calendar and hurry is a matter of soul. See the difference?
Huge difference.
We're saying no one has to necessarily change what's going on in your life, but we're talking about what's going on inside of you. It is actually possible to live a very fruitful life while having a soul that's not revving at the pace of the culture. And this is evidenced by Jesus himself.
Which I was just going to say that, as you watch Jesus, now obviously he was living in a different time, but of that course. Doesn't matter. The model was still there. He was continually traveling. He was continually being, pulled on. Like I picture him, his sleeve, people grabbing onto his sleeve and literally the hem of his garment sometimes, right? But being pulled on and Jesus come here, Jesus come there, shouted at from the side of the road. And so in his time, he was a busy man.
He was.
And yet we do, at least I do, we do get the sense that he lived in an unhurried way.
Do you ever think of Jesus being stressed? Can you picture that in the Gospels?
No.
I would never use the word stressed.
No. Especially because he stopped. I love how he did not seem hurried because he would stop with the next person that presented themselves and take his time with them. I picture him, always looking into my eyes, not looking over my shoulder like at some business luncheon or something, right? Just looking into our eyes. I love that. Yes, to everything you're saying.
Yeah. Well, one of my favorite images, of course, in the Gospels is the bleeding woman. She's just, for some reason, she's like this person I carry with me because I loved her faith and I loved her desperation. And the reality of her situation, I think it just resonates so deeply. And this is the perfect example of what you're saying. He's on his way to go. Someone's daughter is dying.
Right.
Dying.
Yeah.
And he's still... stops. This woman is doing this, secretly trying to just touch his clothing. Yeah. And he stopped. He said, "Who touched me?" Of course, the disciples are freaking out.
Right.
That's the epitome of the unhurried spirit of Jesus. He knew what the Father had called him to do. He had taken the time to listen. It says very often Jesus withdrew to lonely places to pray. And then he would say, "I only do what the Father has given me to do. I only say what he's given me to say." I think that's beautiful that we read that and we admire that about Jesus, but at Unhurried Living, we believe this is possible for us. Mm. And imperfectly, I've been trying that on over the course of my whole life. I was introduced to solitude and silence when I was 26,
beautiful.
Which not everyone gets to know about that at that age.
Yeah, that young, right.
And so the posture of listening has been in my life for more than half my life now.
Wow.
And I think it's informed who I am to this day.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. And I think, and that's not to say that someone listening that is maybe just being introduced to these spiritual practices and things that we will talk about today, doesn't mean that, oh my goodness, I'm like way behind. I better hurry and catch up. No.
Right, the irony.
Yeah, the irony, right?
Yeah,
no.
I agree with you.
No, it's not, it's not, Jem's not in some better place because she's been, well, maybe she is in a better place. She's been doing it that long.
No, but not. It was a grace.
Yes, it's not a hierarchy thing here we're talking about. It's exactly, we're talking about a grace. Yes, It's a grace. So keep listening. Keep listening. That's what I'm here to say. Yeah.
There's never, like you said, you're never too late. We all start doing whatever we start doing at the moment we are aware of it and we want it.
And I think what's interesting too, often those of us who are in Christian contexts, whether it's, you know, just attending and going to a place of worship regularly or working with a parachurch organization, whatever, we will sometimes look at leadership and think, ah, they've got this nailed, they've got this wired. And sometimes they can be the hardest cases, maybe, if you will, the ones that need it the most. I mean, we all do, but you know what I'm saying. And so I love that you're reaching out to those Christian leaders to help them rest deeper, live fuller, and lead better. I think that's just, it's important, needed.
It's very needed. You can hear stories all the time about people struggling. And that's another thing I think I want to say about what unhurried living is and isn't is, you know, we talked about easy chairs and drinks in your hand, but it's also not daisy fields and floating on clouds. An unhurried life doesn't mean we're walking, right?
Okay.
Right? Yeah. Doesn't mean we're all walking around in a meditative state all the time. I think an unhurried life, again, it's about your unhurried heart, your unhurried soul. And so what that means is you can be like Jesus and be exactly where you are and do what's exactly going on. And you'll see in the book, we're not pulling any punches. We're talking about pain and fear and control and vulnerability. And we're asking questions in those realms because that's what a real life is. We're not hiding from what's actually going on.
Yeah.
And that's when unhurried life comes in.
And I think the other thing I want to say, and correct me if you disagree with this, that's what this forum is for. But sometimes we can fear, and we might not even name it as a fear, that this kind of unhurried living looks the same for everyone. It's not cookie cutter because we are not all the same. I've talked here a lot on the podcast about the Enneagram. We are all wired differently. You know, we're a different type. It's not, you know, it's our faith formation even. While we may learn some of the same things, it looks different because we're all different, created in the image of God, but wired in a different way. And so never fear, you're not going to have to look like Susie next door or Jack down the street that you think, well, that's not me. No, it's very individual, right?
That is so true. And if Alan were here, we could have a really fun discussion about this because on the Enneagram, I'm a 7 and he's a 5.
Oh,
so if
great.
You know anything about those two numbers,
woohoo!
They could not be any more different.
Yeah.
And yet somehow we're both able to walk with God in this way and in our own ways.
Yes.
It was funny. We do this thing called an unhurried community, and we were doing a live webinar last week, I believe it was, and someone asked a question in the forum and we were answering it. And it was funny because we both gave two different answers from our own perspectives, and they were both, you know, whatever, correct.
Right.
Because it was how it works for us.
Right.
And they're very different responses or ways we would have gone into what this person was saying. And that's, you're completely right. It's completely unique.
Yeah. I love that. So be encouraged, friend. You can be who you are in the midst of this unhurried way of living. And I do commend to you, you know, Alan's past books, An Unhurried Life, An Unhurried Leader, and certainly today what we're talking about, the book that Jim and Alan have co-authored, What Does Your Soul Love? So where did this one come from? Where did this book come from? Often it bubbles up out of our own stuff, maybe out of a need of clients that are coming to the two of you. I'm curious.
Yeah. So the seed came because, of course, Alan was published twice. And so InterVarsity Press was asking, do you have something else? And at that point now, we had started into Unhurried Living. We're coming up on 4 years of Unhurried Living being in existence as an organization, although we've been doing this kind of work for a really long time, but in this form. And at that point, Alan did not have a seed of an idea. So we thought, well, let's think about this together. And we both just immediately came to the idea of writing about change and transformation. We started with the word change, but kind of transformation and change, we use them sort of interchangeably. And so that was the seed of it. And that's how the book was born. And so the questions that are in there really came from my own life. There was a time, I was probably in my 40s still, and I was in a plateau, but a good plateau. Like, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes you're on a mountaintop and you're like, things are going well. Yes. I've got some perspective. And I was asking God, how did I get here? I like who I am right now. I can see your faithfulness throughout my life. And I'm curious. And I like to understand how it processes, you know?
Yes. Oh, me too.
And so I asked God, how did this happen? What was going on? And so over the course of months, actually, I just kept that question with me. Like any good spiritual director would, right? We carry our questions with us. And at that point, 7 different ideas, most of which had questions sort of attached to them, came to me. And so I had this seed of a journal entry mm-hmm. with, I had collected 7 answers. And so when Alan and I were thinking about writing this book, I went back to that. And those 7 became 8. And we both had many things to say about each one of the questions that had emerged from that time of prayer.
I love it. So, and I like it too, because you know who's writing when, you know, you let people know if it's a story that's, you know, emerging from one of your life journeys or from the other person. And then other times, you know, you understand you're writing with this unified voice, and I find it very easy to read. It was not like herky jerky. Here's Jim, here's Alan. It does not at all feel like that. So I love that.
So glad.
Well.
That's what we were aiming at. Yes.
Yeah.
That's,
I think you
good
hit that.
Editing.
Yes. Right. Grateful for good editors. Yeah. I think you guys hit the mark. So where do you start, actually? I'll ask this. Where do you start in this whole process of what does your soul love? Because you're starting from that point of, you know, we're talking about transformation and these questions then intersect our lives. But where do you say that change begins?
Well, there is a...
And maybe that's the invitational piece. Yeah.
So for me, I like, not everyone actually has a paradigm for living an entire life of change for many and various reasons, mm-hmm. personality, training, lack of knowledge, no blame. Just we have all kinds of reasons.
Yes. And I would even say some of us grew up in households and or spiritual streams that didn't encourage change. So some of it we come by honestly because we were not encouraged to change. It's like, well, no, once you know this, that's where you kind of stay for the rest of your life. You are good to go. And others grew up in very different environments. So I guess just to illustrate your point. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And so I think one of the big points of this book is just the vision and hoping to entice people into a journey that actually is being authored and initiated and led by God himself, and it's possible for us to cooperate. And so there's a quote in the first chapter from Thomas Kelly, Testament of Devotion.
Yes, love him.
And I won't quote the whole thing here, but the gist is that there are these 2 levels of living that we're all in, and we can recognize both of them. There's the level at which we have our day-to-day lives. We're seeing it with our eyes. We're getting in our car. We're with our friends, or we're doing our work. We're having relationships. There's just the day-to-day living that we do. We're doing the dishes. And then there's this other level where there's worship and prayer and interaction with God, and it's sort of the life of the spirit. He calls it very poetically divine breathings. And for me, the reason we put that in the invitation at the very beginning is because, to me, what I think we're trying to do in this book is give people very tangible ways of connecting the two, because Thomas Kelly's point is both of these levels are going on at the same time all the time, but the accent must always be on the deeper level, that level of the spirit, the level of the soul. And so people would go, well, that's great, but how do you do that?
Right.
And we're trying to offer at least one way. There's more than what we've written, of course, in this little book. But we've done our best. We've chosen 8 questions that you could lean into and you could make progress in your life, this life of transformation.
Why does everyone, it's pretty broad, but I'll say it. Why does everyone always start with desire? is that kind of the linchpin? Question of desire, which you know, is where you begin. You know, what do you really want? Yeah.
It's classic for spiritual directors to start with that, isn't it? It's very Ignatian. And some of us have come up through traditions where our emotions or our feelings about things or desires were, if not completely set aside, at least dulled, or you shouldn't rely on this.
Mm-hmm. Or the flip of that.
Or, you here know, it is, and that's reality, because this is the thing. Right, so on either end of that scale, we're not talking about that. But there is an actual valid place you can sit with God. What do I want? There is something God-given about, don't you think God would put within us a desire that would somehow bear the fruit of being some manifestation of the goodness of God?
Yes, I would think that. But I don't think we naturally think that. I think these deeper questions are not what generally get raised in our day-to-day life, and our week-to-week church life. And in part because, you know, there's a different purpose probably to our kind of Sunday existence at church.
Right. Right. So, yeah.
And so I think we have to sign on to, I think we have to do a lot of our own digging and work personally to find classes here and there, to find a spiritual director, to find, an organization like Unhurried Living. A lot comes back to us. But I think as we read and engage with Scripture and with the Holy Spirit as we're reading, those questions and encouragements start bubbling up.
Yes, yes. And it's maybe culturally just, we live in America. I don't know. You probably have around the world people.
Yes, but probably more North Americans, yes.
Yeah, North America, we tend to be intellectual and in our heads. And there, you can only go so far in your lifetime journey in your head.
Yeah.
And at some point, you've got to be able to go somewhere else to continue that journey of transformation, and trying to just see even what you want is just a good place to start.
Okay, I can hear someone listening and going, all right, I hear this. This is great. How the heck do I get in touch with that? You know, that's, especially if I've been living in my head for decades. How do I hear that question? And I've heard others maybe raise it before in my life, and I've just skipped past it because it felt too hard and maybe even too vulnerable, you know?
Yes.
How do I get in touch with what do I really want?
Yeah, so now we're coming back to the name of our organization.
Yeah.
It's one of the Unhurried Living. This is when the rubber meets the road. And we talked about the life of Jesus and Jesus getting away to lonely places. It said, often withdrew.
Yeah.
So, of course, you expect to hear a spiritual director say that. So I get that. I get that. No one here is trying to be idealistic, overly optimistic, or pie in the sky. I'm actually coming from a place of now, I'll just say it, I'm 55 years old, okay? I'm old enough to have lived a bit, and I'm telling you from my actual experience that as I have set time aside over the course of my life, most of my adult life, there's this space that opens up inside of you that becomes more, shall we say, susceptible to hearing yourself and or God. And so if you've never done this before, you could start with 5 minutes. you know, or if you had enough time, an hour, we're not talking about going away for a silent retreat for 8 days. I'm talking about patterns and rhythms in your life where you, and this, again, this is so countercultural because we are bombarded constantly by the phone in our hand, let alone all the other kinds of media, but that phone, distraction, it's just distraction. So you could step into this with 5 minutes a day of silence and learn to just listen.
And I would add on to that. Number one, let me add on to that a great big exclamation point first. Okay. So I'm hearing the other question maybe emerging in someone's mind. I want to do that, but what if this desire doesn't, you know, my deepest desire, what do I really want? What if that doesn't emerge in that first 5 minutes? Mm-hmm. And likely, I just want to be encouraging and say, and likely it won't.
Right.
Right. You know, and that's okay. I think I just love the fact that the kindness of Christ to be with us, stay with us right where we are without any judgment of when that emerges. But if we just, it's just keep coming, keep 5 minutes-ing, you know? Doing that.
I could not agree with you more. You're right. We're not going to these 5 minutes to get some goodie from God. It's a matter of receptivity. We're just training ourselves in receptivity.
I like that. That's a great
Again,
word.
Like, you know, because I said before, we were talking about being in our head all the time, and we tend maybe sometimes to do what spiritual practices of that are more maybe external or doing, you know, if you use the illustration of breathing, inhaling and exhaling, we do a lot of exhaling.
Yes.
So these 5 minutes, these 1 hour, whatever, you're taking a big inhale. Mm. And I want to put an exclamation point on what you said. You're absolutely right. You cannot promise that something amazing will happen in 5 minutes, but you can say, I set aside 5 minutes to remember that I'm in the presence of God, because we always are. And I chose for 5 minutes to be open if God wanted to do anything or say anything or remind me of anything. And then as graciously as you walked in, you can step away from it. So I agree with you.
Yeah. And I think the one other thing, I'd love your comment on this, Jem, as well. We all come to this moment in time where we're ready to ask that question and engage with that deeper desire. We all come to that differently. Some it's just, something is starting to open up in me and I'm just all of a sudden becoming aware of it. For others, and this was my story many years ago, I stepped foot into a big crisis in my life. My marriage fell apart. And that just couldn't happen in the world that I came from. I was in a pile of rubble on the floor, you know? And I wasn't on top of the pile. I was under it, you know? So sometimes it's that crisis moment that comes that propels us into some of these deeper questions and into some of this spaciousness because we are feeling somewhat desperate. And so we come to it from a variety of postures and places.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's actually the perfect foray into the rest of the book, because you don't have to do these in order and stop at desire until you find out what you want. You can't read the rest and move on. I mean, these questions are usually going on concurrently.
Yes. Thank you.
And they overlap, you know, and if you're in a pain time or a resistance time, you better believe once in a while what you really want is going to pop up, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what you're saying. So there is definitely an overlap here and an ebb and a flow of all of these realities.
Let's move forward and talk about resistance, not just because that's what comes next in the book, but because I think this is huge. And it's like, Like there's this piece of me that does really want to believe that, well, as a certain number of years passes and a certain amount of supposed maturity in years lived and spiritual maturity, I think surely the resistances will just... they'll just melt away, and they will never show up again. Wow, what a wrong supposition that is. But talk about resistance, because it comes in a lot of shapes and forms, but it's very present. I think you talk about this, but maybe one of the ways that it comes, to some people, you know, is through fear or through tiredness, or it can come in so many different ways. I think.
Oh yeah.
I hate that.
Yeah, it does. It comes in many ways, and I hadn't really thought about resistance in my life until I mentioned in there one of my first spiritual director was Abbot David. He was a obviously a Catholic priest. But just a genuine, warm, loving presence in my life. And he said to me, you know, Jem, any resistance in your life is actually your next invitation to growth. And I had never heard that before. I just thought resistance, you know, you're resistant to something because that's not good and you shouldn't be doing that.
I think that's almost how it's presented in to us somehow, in the broader culture. Yeah, if you're resisting something, exactly. Oh, we shouldn't go that direction. That's what this means.
Exactly.
Well, and again, we come to the counterintuitive word, or right? Why is the spiritual life and transformation stuff always so counterintuitive?
It is. Well, because our culture isn't going this way, just in general, right. Not trying to condemn anything or even critique anything, but just we all understand the culture in which we live. It's not conducive to this, especially in this information age. It's about how you look and what you have and what people are saying about you and, you know, all of what you do.
I want to read something you wrote because I loved this. I underlined it and put a star next to it because...
I hope it's me. It may be Alan.
No, I think it's... Well, who knows? Just claim it as yours there,
I'll
Jem.
Claim it as mine.
So in the book I read, resistance traps me. I find myself less free, even enslaved to a phantom me. I love that phrase. But freedom lived in love under the Spirit's guidance and empowerment grows and flourishes. Resistance traps me. I find myself less free, even enslaved to a phantom me. That's worth sitting with and thinking about. That
really good.
That
it,
line
of the false self.
Yes, exactly. You know, but that phrase, even enslaved to a phantom me, just a different way of saying it, a different word choice, and like made me sit up and go, yeah, that's.
Well, isn't that what we're really after? Don't you want to uncover the true self? I mean, God has imaged you, Psalm 139, right? And I think a lot of this journey is just uncovering, letting go, unpacking, setting aside, so that the true self that is there emerges.
However, I will say this, because I remember early on, many years ago, being very fearful of that and thinking, what if I uncover the true self, my true self, and I don't like it, or people are repelled by me, or I'm more alone than ever before? I do think that fears can enter into that, to this.
Totally. Fear and anxiety comes in almost everywhere, doesn't it?
Yes, pretty much.
I mean, yeah, no, I hear you. It is scary to think about going on a journey that you don't really have any control over. You have a semblance of control as to whether or not you're deciding to keep going. If you're putting yourself in the hands of God and you're trusting Him to reveal to you, there is a lack of control there, and that is fearful.
I think another place in this particular chapter that I loved, and I think this might have been Alan, as he talked about, it was great. He talked about his resistance, that he loves getting on a bike and going for a nice long, hour-long bike ride. You know, for me, it's like, I love, though I wasn't quite sure I could use the word love, but I'm going to follow Alan and go, I love going to the health club and walking on the treadmill. I like it better than other things, certainly. But what does come into play were all of the resistances after he made that statement. I love getting on the bike and going for a nice long bike ride. But, sometimes I feel too tired to cycle. Sometimes it's too hot or too cold. Or, you know, I'll probably feel more like cycling tomorrow. I loved, like, stating it like that. It's like everyone can understand that. It's a completely... But then when he goes on to talk about how resistance appears like a brick wall, but really it is like a piece of tissue paper.
Crepe paper.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I love that crumbles as we push back, but it looks like a brick wall to us. And so we're thinking, I can't push back. Why bother pushing back? It's a brick wall, but it's only a piece of tissue paper designed to look like a brick wall. That, to me, was one of the great illustrations.
Oh, yeah. Well, I have to say, I'll brag on my honey for a bit. I'm so proud of him because he's done a lot of work in his life. He has just inherent anxiety. And then, therefore, inherent fear comes up a lot, too. And so as he continued to lean into this area of resistance / fear, you know, again, they can overlap. He's really grown in this, and so much so that he was able to give this illustration. And it's what came to him after he realized he learned to lean into it. Once he would walk up to what he thought was an impenetrable brick wall that you can't get around or over, and all he had to do was touch it, and he was like, oh my gosh, this is tissue paper.
Yeah.
And then you can just separate it and walk through. That was hard won by him. And so I think that's why it's such a compelling illustration, because he lived it.
Yeah,
it's what he found to be true. So it's a great, illustration.
That resistance chapter, it's got a lot of underlining and exclamation points in my book. I really love that. But then, you know, you actually, I think it's even in this same chapter, one of the things that I love, because I think what we need, and this isn't because we're always looking for, give me steps to do something. That's not, you know, spiritual transformation and growth is not measured by or can't be given in do step one, which will lead to step two. It's not linear, you know, or whatever. So, but you do give what I think is this beautiful posture of transformation template, right?
Yeah.
And I think, and you come back to it at the end of the book, but I as well, and kind of sandwich it or add a couple of other things onto it that are part of this. But I think it might be helpful for those listening, for you to talk about that posture for transformation, because I think sometimes we can struggle answering these simple questions. My husband Mike will often say, I think one of the things we need to have as we approach life is a great curiosity. It can be he'll go into a thing about it keeps us not boring and not bored either way. You know, sometimes you run into people and you think, oh, they've not asked a single question. Like they have no curiosity at all. And you're really working hard to keep the conversation going, and you know how that is. And so maybe this posture for transformation, it doesn't come naturally to everyone. And so I think it's really important to talk about it, because it is that entree. It's kind of that on-ramp, if you will.
Yeah. I'm really glad you brought this up, because I agree with you. I think it is. We can pick it up at any stage of our life and start it. And what's funny about it is, remember how I told you earlier that even the questions that came in this book came from a time when I was asking God, how did I get here? I got into another situation like that where I was just curious about some things. And so this where we're headed with this posture transformation, these these ideas actually came, I believe, from God as an answer to one of my own questions about my journey. So maybe if nothing else, I'm hopefully giving the example that sometimes we have not because we ask not. Yeah. And so when I want to know something, I usually will ask because it can't hurt.
Yes.
I mean, you already don't know. And so that it can't get any worse than that.
My statement is this, you know what? You might as well ask. If you don't, you know, they could say yes or no, but if you don't ask, they can't say anything.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, that is becoming more true in my life the older I get. So I usually will press in now. So this posture of transformation is actually three, we'll call them steps, but again, that's that word. Let's hold that word very loosely.
Yes, exactly.
Let's hold it loosely. So in this process, there's actually 9 steps. And I think they flow very well together.
Or
and
concepts, or concepts that build
concepts.
That build on each other.
Yeah, let's use that word. Yeah, they build on each other, but you can also come at them in different orders.
That's true.
I offered them as a 9 concept sort of flow because I think they do ideally do that. But again, anytime you make any kind of system, it breaks down at some point.
That's true. So thank you for making that point, actually. You're right. Yeah.
But yeah, so there's an appendix that has all 9. And then throughout the book, I introduce the 3 sets of 3 in different chapters. But in the resistance chapter, as you said, I talked about the posture of transformation. And it really just consists of 3 words. And the 3 words are open, aware, and willing. And anyone can start with those, I think, because they are sort of, I guess, did you say entry level or bottom rung or something?
Or something. You know, it's that, I think it's the beginning posture that we have to move into transformation. So yeah.
So the word, let's take the word open. So are you open to this? If you aren't, the opposite of open is closed, right? So if the door is closed, if your heart is closed or your mind is closed, by definition, you are not going somewhere. So I think it's nice to start with deciding that you're going to have a posture of openness. Do you want it? Do you want whatever's next? Even if you're scared of it, that's fair. Well, let's be sure.
It's good. Yeah.
I'm afraid of it, but I want it. And sometimes some of us don't become open until the pain of staying where we are overshadows the fear of moving forward, right?
And you say in the book, you know, God welcomes us at our current state of readiness. I love that.
Yes, and then, I believe that.
And then you do go on to say what you just said. You know, sometimes the pain of staying where we are has to become greater than our perceived pain of, you know, moving forward. Yeah.
That has happened to me multiple times in my life, that I was stubborn enough that I wasn't going anywhere until it got worse.
Yeah, I've been there. Totally. Yeah.
So the first word is just open. Do you want this? And again, let's reiterate what you just said. You be open at any level that you feel ready. Okay.
Actually, what you just said, because I read it from your book.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. But totally. Yes.
And this is important to us, that everyone who hears has the opportunity to take the next step that's right for them where they currently are.
Yes, thank you.
You don't have to be somewhere else.
Yeah, that's beautifully said, and I think super important to hear. Yes, thank you.
Yeah, so open, do you want it? And then the second word is aware. And with the word awareness, I think you could also use the word notice. That's a very formational word. It just means your eyes are open, you're looking around. Now that you're open, now maybe open your eyes and your heart and your soul in a new way. What are you seeing now that you're open? Pay attention.
And I was just going to add to that, that sometimes if we struggle, sometimes I can realize that, wow, I'm not very observant. What color are my husband's eyes, but yet I can see something across the room? Like less observant to things like right in front of my face. But sometimes we can even just practice walking down the street or driving and noticing a building that we've never seen before, but we've driven past 10 times. Sometimes we can even do a little practice of noticing physical things. And sometimes that can help us open up to this inner awareness too.
Yes, yes. It's very practical. Just what's happening. You can even just start with what's actually happening.
Yeah.
What are my patterns, my habits? my longings. And some of those might be more hidden, and that's okay. You don't have to go for those right away, but you can just see what's going on. A lot of times, again, because we're so busy and we're so distracted and we've learned how to numb ourselves instead of rest, it might take some practice, even just noticing what's actually occurring. What am I feeling? Oh my goodness, I'm sad. Ugh, I don't want to be sad, right?
Gotta start with the noticing. Mm-hmm. Good.
What is occurring? And as you're ready, then it leads to the next one. As you're ready, then are you willing? And the question that goes with that is, are you willing to take action? So let's say you did notice, I'm sad, I'm afraid, or whatever. The next movement might be, well, okay, so you're sad or afraid. If you're unable to move on right this moment, let's respect that. But as you're willing, what are you willing to do next about this then? Can you feel it? Can you talk to someone about it? Are you willing to act? And one of the greatest things I learned from my counselor many years ago in terms of willingness was he had different stages of willingness. If you couldn't say, I'm willing to do that with a period or an exclamation point, he would say, well, then, are you willing to be willing? And I think there's so much grace in that.
Yes.
So if you find yourself, you know, open and then aware and I'm noticing and you want to be willing, but you're not, it's not all there, you can say to God in prayer, Lord, I'm willing to be willing. Will you help me move along here so that I can continue on this journey you're inviting me to?
Yeah, I love that. You know, you toward the end of this chapter on resistance, you write, noticing and paying attention to the resistances that arise within us is good spiritual work. Continue to ask yourself, you know, where am I saying no thanks to God? Where does resistance rise up in me? And that takes us again back to these words that you just talk about, that posture of transformation. Am I open? You know, am I aware? Am I noticing? And am I willing? And then end up by focusing in on some beautiful questions that you and Alan have put at the ends of chapters. And I would just say this is not quick concepts to work through. We already talked about that at the very beginning. But you might want to sit with a chapter and just kind of plant yourself with some of the helpful concepts inside a chapter and the wonderful questions that flow out of the chapter that are given at the end in the section where it's called, you know, be transformed. Because this is not work to rush through. It's important work and helpful work. And, you know, we have really just scratched the surface. I've loved this back and forth conversation, but I didn't want to rush through the materials. I mean, literally, we have just scratched the surface in you know, what does your soul love? And we've just tackled some of the questions that are raised in the book. But I hope your appetite is whetted to move forward on the journey, to engage, to be open and aware, willing. You know, these are some of the beginning places, and maybe you're just feeling this stirring. That's my prayer. Any closing thoughts from you, Jem? Often I'll say, what do you hope people take away from the book? And maybe more in this case, well, maybe you can answer that, but, you know, we've just talked about the very, very beginnings of the book. There's so much more. You know, what is your hope for people on the transformational journey?
So my hope is that you might know and experience the love and the presence of God and begin to trust more and more that He sees and knows you deeply, and He's longing. Isaiah says the Lord longs to be gracious to you. He rises to show you compassion. I think if we can catch that vision and then decide to be on this cooperative transformational journey, that's my hope. And that is one of the reasons we wrote this book. We want to invite you onto the journey, even if there are painful or fearful or out of control places. this is the journey to a life well lived, a life of health. And God is with you no matter what.
And thank you for that last phrase. I think sometimes we think, wow, my life is going to scare God off. It just feels too much, too messy. And no, he is with us. He's not scared.
He is not. We're scared.
He's not scared. He's not scared. Sometimes I think it's good to say that because we think, really? I don't know. No, we are, but he is not. Yeah. Oh, how wonderful to have you on the podcast. Thank you so much for joining and being with us here on Faith Conversations.
Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed my time with you.
Thank you. And to everyone else, as always, I say, keep the conversation going.